Hi again, everybody, and welcome back to Loose Wheels, the podcast, centralmaine.com, and the sports department at centralmaine.com. I'm Travis Barrett. I'm your host. I'm the auto racing writer at the Kennebec Journal and the Morning Sentinel. If you're like me, you're still recovering from Memorial Day weekend a little bit. It was a long weekend, a lot of racing, a lot of miles. Had a great time over at Wiscasset Speedway, seeing Ben Ashline win the Coastal 200, his first win at Wiscasset Speedway in a career that goes back probably longer than either he or I want to admit. Makes us feel old, but really just absolutely put a hurting on him over there at Wiscasset. It was incredible performance, and I think it was a mostly popular one. It may have been a race largely devoid of drama, but I think in the end, I think everybody was generally impressed with what they saw from Ben Ashline and that 15 main team. They did a really good job. We're going to talk to Ben. He's going to join us on the podcast here tonight. Really some great stuff about kind of his career and how it's come full circle, so we'll talk to him. We're also going to talk to Joey Pulwarczyk, the Hudson, New Hampshire driver who won the Pro All-Star Series race at Thunder Road. We'll talk to him a little bit about Thunder Road and what that place has meant to him. Again, another driver I've known for a long time, and you know, it's hard to believe sometimes that he's won as many races as he has and done as many things as he has already. I still think of him as a teenage driver I first met, but Joey's going to talk about what it meant to win there. It was his first win at Thunder Road since Tom Curley died. I think that was pretty emotional for him, so that was good. You know, it was funny. The weather wasn't great in Maine for most of the weekend, but we still saw, you know, a lot of people out at the racetracks this weekend and kind of getting ready for summer here. We've had a good stretch of weather. Warm weather always means, you know, Saturday nights at the racetrack in the summer in Maine. So I think we're almost there. I think winter's finally gone. I think spring is finally here. So thank heavens for that. I think we can all agree on that. We can't agree on much these days, whether it comes to politics or rule books or whatever, but I think we can all agree that I think winter's finally gone, so that's good. Like I said, we're going to talk to Ben Ashline, winner of the Coastal 200, a little bit later on, but first, we're going to bring in Joey Pulwarczyk and talk to him about his win at Thunder Road. Joey started racing when he was a teenager in the American Canadian Tour. Just really kind of was that first, that might not be accurate. But he, you know, he was a young guy that came from those late model ranks and found his way into some K&N Pro Series starts on the NASCAR side. Now he's doing more Pro All-Star Series stuff. His career's kind of really kind of taken an interesting path. So we're going to hear a little bit from him on that. But also, you know, when you think of American Canadian Tour drivers, past and present, when you think of racetracks that you would expect them to have an advantage at, Thunder Road would certainly be one of them. If you haven't been, a really neat little quarter mile in Vermont. The racing is always really good there. That's never the issue. But I'm not convinced that every driver loves racing at Thunder Road. It's quirky. It's temperamental. Joey's going to tell a great story about some of the run-ins he's had with that place. My point being, I don't think there's always a home track advantage for American Canadian Tour drivers at Thunder Road. Even though it's a place that the Pro All-Star Series has not been going for many years. It's only been a few years now that they've been going there. So I think, Joey won there, but I don't think it's quite as simple as, oh, well, I've got an advantage here. I know how to get around this place. I don't think anyone ever really figures out how to get around that place. Maybe Nick Sweet has. Maybe Patrick LaPerle has. Other than that, you know, it's a really special venue, and winning there always means a lot. So here's my conversation with Joey about winning at Thunder Road. So we're here with Joey Pulwarczyk of Hudson, New Hampshire. He just won the pass race at Thunder Road over the weekend. Joey, it's been a while. It is great to catch up with you.
Yeah, it's great to be back on. Great to have my name talked about again.
Well, we were just saying before we started the phone call that you and I have known each other for a long time, which makes us both old. But we can get into that. Tell me about the race a little bit on Sunday. I know that you had a tire issue and kind of had to come from the back. It had to be especially satisfying anytime you win at Thunder Road.
Oh, I mean, anytime, no matter where you're in at Thunder Road, if you can win there, it's, for me anyway, it's pretty big just because of my history there and with Tom Curley, that being his track and all that. I mean, it's always special, but Yeah, you know, we've gone past the Stone Thunder Road. I think this is the third time there, or fourth maybe.
Yeah.
But every time we've gone there in the past, we've just had issues. I've blown two motors, on two occasions there. On one occasion, I lost power steering early on in the race, and it just made for a long race. And so this was really the first time that, I can't say we didn't have any issues. We got a flat tire early on in the race, but, we struggled, from practice and the heat race and we didn't get a set of practice tires because, we had a set that had like 70 laps on them and we're going to just save the practice set for the next race we go to. Because Thunder Road has a history of tearing tires apart, so we figured we'll wait till next weekend.
Yeah.
So we were practicing on old tires, actually from the Officer 250 last year, which was my last race before we started getting going this year.
Holy cow.
So I took a little bit of a break there. So they were old, let's put it that way. The car just felt kind of, on the rack in practice. But I figured, we'll put some time on this thing and we'll be great.
Yep.
Well, we did that for the heat race, and I started fourth and there's eight cars, and we finished eighth or seventh, something like that.
Right. So great start to the day.
Yeah, I mean, perfect. Exactly how I imagined it. So needless to say, after the heat race, I came on the radio and I said, we're in big trouble. And so we just started making changes, spring changes, bump stop changes, everything. For like 10 minutes, I just looked at the car and said, what do you want? It's like, well, what can I do? And we threw the kitchen sink at it and started the race, and the car was pretty good. And then we get the flat tire. And then in the back of my mind, I know the only tire we have to put on here is a old tire from a year ago. But luckily, everything kind of worked out. I mean, the car was still good, and we caught the right, when the caution came out, we were in the right lane to jump up a few spots to the outside. It took, the outside really isn't there yet. It will be once that pavement wears in a little bit.
Mm.
But we just, everything kind of just lined up, and it was a really special feeling for me to be able to pull that off.
It sounds to me like the car told you exactly what it wanted. It just wanted that old tire.
Apparently, I'm telling you.
I have a theory that as great as Thunder Road is from a spectator standpoint, from an entertainment standpoint, I have the sneaky suspicion that a lot of guys who've raced there for a long time never really feel comfortable out there. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, the new pavement kind of takes up for a little bit of it because it gives you a little bit more grip, but mm-hmm. it's still, as soon as you start feeling comfortable that, all right, I got this place figured out, it'll bite you real quick.
Yeah.
You always have to be on your toes there. Yeah. It definitely has more grip now, but yeah. back when I first started there, I got real friendly with the front stretch wall, so I don't take it for granted, even with the grip.
Yeah, you're right. Well, Andy, I want to ask you about, because I think it's worth telling the story. Maybe you won't like telling it as much as I like hearing it, but I forget if it was the Milk Bowl or the Labor Day 200, but the year that you were so dominant, and then midway through the race, caught your tire off the backstretch asphalt and ended up in those bushes in turn three, like... Just, and I remember having to go talk to you and being like,
"Oh,
this is one interview I am not looking forward to."
It's funny you bring that up because I remember that perfectly, and I remember you coming over and interviewing me, being like, "Well, I wasn't looking forward to this." That was 2008 Memorial Day Classic.
Yeah.
Back when it was an act.
Okay, Memorial Day. All right. Yeah. See, I was wrong.
Yeah. And we led the whole thing. That was still really. Pretty early in my late model career, we had a couple wins, but nothing major.
Yeah.
And, I was running, at that point, the outside was where you really wanted to be.
Yep.
You were running, as high as you could.
Yeah.
And I just skipped the right sides off the backstretch and never never caught up with it, and that was one of them.
Sorry. But I think, I do think it does. I'm sure you are going to kind of talk about this, but it does sort of go into. I think if people look at it from the outside and they go, Joey Pohl, AC team guy, lot of history at Thunder Road. I don't think people realize your history at Thunder Road is both hot and cold. I mean, it is as up and down as
so
it can
hot
be.
And cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Couldn't describe that any better. I mean, there'd be in 22 when we won the Milk Bowl in 2010. Just like we couldn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
You know, we were and for time trials and stuff for Milk Bowl, we've always been great. We've always been able to do really well at that. But
yep.
Other than that. the race where Tony Stewart, the Governor's Cup, we had a really good night there.
Yep.
But, I mean, like I was saying to somebody, that my last win at Thunder Road was, until Sunday, was 8 years ago. So it's been 8 years since I'd ever even been to Victory Lane there.
Jeez.
It felt good.
Yeah, I bet it did. So I know you mentioned it a little bit, but I want to ask you about Tom Curley because I haven't yet, and I know what he meant for your racing career when you were really young. I feel like, for me, Tom Curley is a guy that, whether you agreed with him or not, is irrelevant, because he's a guy who at least was willing to ask the questions, and he made people think about their product in a different way, good and bad.
And
so, it's an open-ended question for you, but when you hear Tom Curley's name, what does it mean to you? What did he mean to you?
It means a lot, more than just racing. Like, everyone looks at Tom Curley as the racing promoter, ACC leader, and just, a staple in New England racing. And I thought that I look at him and see that too, don't get me wrong, but he also, we met at I was 14 when I first met him. He came to Lee Speedway when I first started racing late models there, and watched me race because he wanted to run on his tour, but I wasn't old enough.
Yep.
So he wanted to just, see if I could, I guess just see how I did or whatever, I don't know.
Yep.
And we ended up winning our heat race that night and led the whole race until, who would have thought I got a flat tire?
I see a common theme.
Yeah, I mean, it happened to me at start on the last half race we had. He really took a liking to me and really, he was a mentor to young guys. Like I said, it was more than just racing. I'd have a problem in my life with a girl or something like that. I would reach out and talk to him about it. We'd go to lunch or grab something to eat and just talk about it. And, he told me his whole life story about what he went through. And he had a rough upbringing that a lot of people don't really know about. That was probably the most emotional I've ever been after a win, just because, I was just expecting to see Big Tom coming down through the flag stand ready to just give me a big hug, because that's what always happened there, no matter what.
Yeah.
I also think that he has something to do with Sunday, because we should have won. I mean, we really shouldn't have. As bad as the car was earlier, the flat tire, and I blew out a bump stop, at some point during the race.
Wow.
The car would not stop hitting the track. It just, everything worked out. And with two to go, when BJ and Reed started racing with each other, and I kind of was able to get 2 to 3 car lengths there, and then saw the white flag, I was like, I just couldn't believe it. I was just, it was a good one.
I think Tom probably spent most of the day just silently reminding you that place, you had to respect it. That's probably what happened.
Yeah. I wouldn't doubt it. He's probably laughing the whole time, too.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
That's what this kid.
Yeah. I do want to ask you about, and you mentioned starting out when you were 14 years old running late models, and of course I've known you as long as I have, so I know that, you race the the ACT Tour. You've won the Oxford 250. You've made some K&N starts. You're running the super late model stuff now. If I had told you when you were 18 years old that this would be what you'd be doing in racing, what would you have said?
You know, my goal was always to make it, to NASCAR and everything like that. And I've learned, the hard way along the way that it's not just about performance. It's not just about, driving. It's about being able to sell yourself and marketability.
Yep.
And, bringing a sponsor is a big help.
Yep.
you kind of lose sight of some of the things. Like, we were so caught up back in like 2010, we were able to do a lot of huge things with like the Milkbowl and Loudon, and then the 250 a few years after that. That we kind of, we're still looking forward to like trying to make it to the next step with K&N, and like you kind of lose sight of the things that we accomplished. And,
right.
And now, I look back at it and it's like some people try a lifetime just to get into a race like that or get a top 10 in a race like that. And we've been able to win some of the biggest ones around with just, we don't have paid help. Just me and my dad really working on the car during the week, and then my crew that I've had for same guys for forever.
Yeah.
We just show up and we try to have a good time. And if you would have said when I was 18 that we would have all these huge, staple wins, I would have said that's awesome. But, it's crazy that we've been able to accomplish all that. It's a big deal.
Yeah, well, it is, and I think that's why I think, now that you're a wise old 29 years old, but at some point I think everybody kind of looks back and you think in the moment it's really hard to enjoy that stuff, but when it's not over for you, obviously. I mean, you're still racing, you still got a lot of years ahead of you, but there comes a point where everybody, you have to have that perspective where you say, wow, we really, because there was a stretch where from the outside looking in, when that 97 car showed up at a race in any division, it didn't matter. You watched, right? This is a team that can win these races. And I think it's really easy when you're in it in the moment to kind of lose sight of that probably.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you don't even think about it. You just show up and you try to win races.
Yeah.
And then when there's a race the next week, like you forget about it. You don't forget about it, but you put it out of your mind.
Yeah.
Real quick.
Mm.
And it's different now. Like, I mean, better than anybody. I've raced every single weekend since I was 14 to, till 28 last year.
Yeah.
And, we had a little bit of a bump in the road, I guess you could say, last year, where I had a point where I bought a house and it was just, everything was a little nuts and we had so much to do. And I was at the point where, like I said, we don't have any full-time guys on the car or anything like that. And I work on regular cars all during the day. So it's just race cars at night. And, my team would be here every night if they lived here, but most of my team is from Vermont and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it just got to the point where, I just couldn't do it every single night anymore. And we took a little bit of a break there.
Yeah.
And now, we're just picking and choosing. We're doing a five race deal with Mike Zider on the ACT side of things. And my races are kind of just, I pick the ones I want to do. And, we might add some here and there if we're ready. But if it's a week where, it's not a race that we necessarily have to go to, then we're going to take our time and get ready for the one that, the next one that we can go to and be fully prepared. I've done the every week deal thing for 13 years or something like that. So it's all right to have a little bit of a break.
Yeah. Well, it is a grind, and like you said, you get watching points, and you at some point everybody, you stop having fun, and you go, what is the point? We're supposed to be having fun at this, right? At some point,
exactly.
You got to enjoy it.
Yeah.
If you don't enjoy it,
exactly.
then you're insane.
Yeah.
So just quickly then, so which what are the couple of races that we can expect to see you at this summer?
Well, I think the next one will probably be Mike Zider will be running the ACT car at Waterford in a couple weeks. And we're on the fence. We may go to Michigan for that Money in the Bank 150 that we went to last year. But it's all a matter of who we can get to go. And, you know, it's a lot to change over, too, in a short amount of time. So that's a possibility. But you know, we'll be at Petridge for the past race, obviously the Auction 250. The C-Comp 10,000 win show in July. And I think the TAS race at White Mountain. And, you know, just whatever ones we want to hit along the way.
You're definitely going to be busy. No matter what you say, you're going to be busy.
Yeah, we'll be busy.
That's a good schedule, though. Well, listen, I really appreciate you taking a few minutes and catching up. We could talk to you forever. It's always good.
We have some stories.
What's that?
I said we have some stories.
We have some stories. This could be a 7-part podcast, probably. we've got many of them. But anyway, I want to say thanks for your time, and congratulations on your win at Thunder Road again.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me on.
You bet. Again, many thanks to Joey for coming on Loose Wheels as we sort of roll our way into this podcast. It's episode number 2. It feels like just last week we recorded the first episode, doesn't it? But Joey's great. Always great. Always fun to talk to. You know, really always a guy that's kind of got perspective on motorsports, especially in New England. And so again, it's good to see him win at Thunder Road. We're going to look ahead now. We've got Ben Ashline, winner of the Coastal 200, coming up here in a few minutes. But before that, I promised you a weekly feature called TB's Press Box, and we'll talk about whatever is on my mind, whatever I'm fired up about. Those of you that have known me for the better part of the last 2 decades know I can get fired up about seemingly inconsequential things. And though I've mellowed a little bit in my old age, as a good friend reminded me last week, there are some things that still get me kind of wound up. This week, I don't know how much, you know, I certainly do not pay as much attention to NASCAR, to the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series as I used to. Certainly when I was, you know, traveling more back in my days of doing motorsports full time as a career. I saw a lot of Cup stuff and followed a lot of Cup stuff and knew a bunch of those guys, but I don't follow as much anymore, and I think the reason for that, in large part, is that the very thing that was designed to make me enjoy it more is the thing that has really kind of turned me off to it. When NASCAR introduced stage racing last year, we're not allowed to call it segments, they're stages, and they gave out, you know, every race, every race has 3 stages, they give out points for winning each stage. They give out, you know, points for positions 1 through 10 relative to each stage. And then they crown a race winner at the end. I find it's taken all the drama right out of the races for me. While they're racing to, quote unquote, win more times every weekend now, I find that you've taken out all the things that I used to love about it. The pit strategy, the fuel mileage, the tire gain, the tire management. It's just, and I think the Coca-Cola 600... which is supposed to be NASCAR's greatest test of, you know, man and machine, right? 600 miles, the longest race on the calendar. 4.5 hours of really getting around Charlotte Motor Speedway. That race is a 4-segment race, so it's essentially 4 100-lap sprints. And Kyle Busch wins the Cup race at Charlotte. It's the only track he hadn't won a points race at that the series currently competes on, which is in itself a remarkable achievement. And whether you like Kyle Busch or not, you really can't question his talent. But I think for me, the problem is the 600 is the epitome of, when are you going to pit? Do you want to take track position? Do you want to wait it out? Do you want to manage your tires? Do you want to try and turn it into a fuel race? And when you turn it into 400-lap segments, everybody goes 55 or 60 laps. They come in, they pit, they race to the end of the segment, they come into pit, they do it all again. They do it 4 times. And to me, it's killing the sport. I don't even know that casual fans are turned on by the fact that you can, that there's quote unquote more racing every week, more wins being given out, more points in play.
because I think the system is so convoluted they can't even figure it out. I think that's a problem. I would, they never will. I just love to see them go back to, it's a 600-mile race. The green flag waves on lap one. The checkered flag waves on lap 400. And whatever happens, happens in between. And, yeah, you're going to have some races that turn out to be real snoozers. But you're going to have some races that turn out to be really fascinating, too. And I think that's kind of what we're losing sight of here. So I think as NASCAR has really tried to stem the tide of decrease in attendance at their races and decrease in television ratings every week and every year, they kind of lost sight of the big picture, which is at the end of it, we just want to see these teams race. We want to see it not be contrived. We want to see the best teams win. And if the best team wins 6 weeks in a row and they lap the field every week doing it, then good on them, right? Good on them. But at some point, NASCAR's got to figure out, like, we're okay with just racing because it works at the short track level where we just race 200 laps and whoever wins, wins. And we don't need to make it any more convoluted than it is. I mean, there was a time when just having a halftime break was kind of an insult to hardcore race fans. And I think stage racing has certainly kind of hurt the overall product. It's kind of been the opposite of what they intended it to be. And I think at some point they probably ought to just reevaluate it. Say, maybe this isn't working the way we want it to. That's TB's press box this week. I feel like I could be more fired up than I am, but, you know, it's the middle of the week, and I probably need coffee. But thanks for sticking it out. Listen, I don't want to delay it anymore. I know most of you aren't listening to me. You're really here to listen to Ben Ashline talk about winning the Coastal 200. Ben Ashline was emotional in victory lane. He found out on his way to the racetrack that he lost his grandmother, who was very close to, decided to race anyway, went out and won it for her. And Sweet Marie, the number 15 ME, man, she was in fine form. At one point, I thought he was going to lap the field. And if the cautions had fallen any differently, he might have. And he absolutely would have deserved it. It was not a fluke. So very emotional win for him. His first career win, it was cast at Speedway. He had a chance last year in the Coastal 200 to win it. Just came up a little bit short. He kind of got bit, ironically, by the strategy game. And finished second a year ago to Andrew McLaughlin. This year, he made sure there wasn't going to be a second-place finish for that car and really kind of came through the strategy portion of that race in the middle stages in really good shape and made it work. And I think it's an interesting conversation that we have with Ben about why the Coastal 200 means so much to him and also kind of how he's matured as a driver. Most of you will know Ben Ashline best for 2012, he certainly knows that year. It's a year he'd like to forget. He was the prohibitive favorite to win the Oxford 250 that year. Was fast, had a really good race car, ended up crashing, trying to make a move in traffic for the lead in his qualifying race, and did not turn out so well for him. He ended up not even making the starting field for the Oxford 250 because he wrecked the race car, and that race car you know, ultimately kind of ended his week-to-week racing career, if you will. So here's Ben. Great conversation. So give it a listen and hear what Ben has to say about kind of where his career is at now and what he does for a living. All right. So the Coastal 200 has wrapped up about, looks like, I don't know, a little over an hour ago, maybe. Hour ago, we'll say.
Yeah.
We're here with the winner, Ben Ashline. Ben, I know I asked you in victory lane. I'm going to ask you again. Was it as easy as it looked?
It was the car was pretty good. It made my job very, very very easy. Yeah, it did. That's the easiest way to put it, I guess. You know, there was a lot of good cars, but you know, just I was able to focus more on where I wanted to be, throw points of the race. You know, lap traffic, that was big. Not putting myself in a position, and honestly, it cost me there when Dave got by. I put myself in a bad spot. I knew I did. You know, and it was. Obviously, Dave caught me snoozing hard, and you know, kudos to him. He timed that right. But man, that was fun. That car was so good, so good.
It looked like it would have been fun. Last year, you and I talked about 2012 and the Oxford 250, and kind of how that sort of chased you, right?
Yeah.
Don't read the paper tomorrow. Because we did mention it again.
Oh.
But I think tonight, in some ways, goes a long way to kind of just putting that finally in the past. And the reason I say that is I thought some of the things I watched you do
tonight, I don't know if I would say I would have seen you do 5 years ago. Like, when Dave took the lead from you, you were pretty patient.
Yeah, you know, you learn a lot seeing as much as we get to see every day. You know, and like I said at one point, the lessons that you learn from others are the most valuable ones, and it's the key, you know, to any part of racing, really, is just to not make the same mistake twice. You know, you keep it simple, and, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And there's plenty of races where I knew that I had made the wrong decisions. I had put myself in bad spots. The 2012 250 is one that I hear about.
Sorry.
Very often. It's okay. It's okay. We have guys coming to work that'll be like, oh, you know, what's your name? And I'll be like, Ben Nashley. I'd be like, oh, you're the guy that ended up in the backstretch wall. Yeah, that's me. That's me.
I'll be fair to you. I think that sometimes the oral history has magnified that to be way worse than it was. Like, yeah. I've heard stories that you were 5 wide. I don't know that it started out that way, but no. we don't have to dissect that.
Yeah, no. It's honestly the biggest thing for me is I haven't been down here since I had a pretty good wreck going into 3 in AJ Pickard's Pro Stock.
Mm.
And honestly, it rung my bell pretty good. I had a headache for a week after that, you know, and it, you know, I'm like, ah, geez, you know, is that going to settle in the back of my mind? No, it didn't. I got too much focus on what was at hand and didn't even think about that side of it. You know, there's a few people that, you know, geez, you haven't been back since you wrecked.
Boy.
Is it going to be okay? Well, yeah, I mean, I forgot about it till you mentioned it.
Well, maybe that's not a good thing. So we're sitting here in the stands. It's quiet now, obviously.
Yeah.
We can hear each other have an actual conversation. We're right here in the grandstands, entering turn one, where the pit road kind of goes off in the pits. Why did you pick here to sit? Why did you choose this spot?
Well, my dad and my uncle used to race street stocks and duros. I mean, they used to put some gnarly race cars together because it's what they wanted to do as a group. And we used to come down as a family and sit in the grandstands in this exact spot. And I would sit down in between the bleachers and use the bleacher as my table in front of me. And I would play with my Matchbox cars and I would watch my dad and my uncle. And I have a lot of memories here that way because it started when I was in diapers, you know. So as far as where I caught the racing bug, you could say, it was sitting in this exact spot. Yeah. Every single week we had it enough that honestly it was kind of saved for us, you know, every week, and it just, there's a lot of memory. I got a lot of flashbacks sitting back here, you know, and it's pretty neat to say that we've etched our name on a list of Coastal 200 winners.
Yeah. Is it, I mean, I know you've had some wins, right? And I asked you in Victory Lane about if this was the biggest win of your career. Maybe that's a stretch, but maybe the better question is, why does it mean so much to you to win here?
Well, I mean, a lot of it stems from what I just said, just growing up here. But, you know, I watched my dad race. I watched my uncle race. My uncle did, you know, fairly well. But all due respect, Dad, if you listen to this, you didn't win any races here. So we had talked about, you know, basically getting a trophy down here. It's like, you know, let's go down and try to do something. And, you know, I'm a competitor. And last year, watching somebody drive away from me was the worst feeling, knowing what we had gone through for the day. But it's just a lot of personal reasons that, you know, you try to better yourself, myself. I'm into, you know, self-motivating stuff, that, you know, positive thinking that way. And I knew what a car was capable of doing down here. It just required the time and effort to put into it. Yeah. And I've literally had no life for the last 4 to 5 months, fairly easy. And I'm talking every day.
Yeah.
You know, and when you work 16, 17 hours a day on race cars between work and at my house, you know, you put a lot of time in, you learn a lot of things.
Yep. Well, I was going to ask you about, I think a lot of guys, especially at this level, one of the things I think I said it last week, one of the things I really love about the Coastal 200 is the focus on weekly late model drivers.
Oh, absolutely.
Which I love. But I think for most everybody, it's a hobby. For you, race cars are a little bit more than just a hobby.
Yeah, I mean, it all started out that way, you know, and I just, the passion I have for this sport I live it every day, you know, and people, you know, oh, geez, you got, you know, you got a job working on race cars. It has its downsides, you know.
Like you can never get away from it.
I don't suspect a carpenter goes home and enjoys, you know, adding on to his house at night, you know, right. Or a plumber wants to go home and plumb something up, you know. It's just the same. It's the same idea. So it makes that part difficult a little bit, but it's, you know, it's part of the reason why I knew what I needed to do and made myself do it.
Yep.
You know.
Let me ask you this. I've always wondered this. When you work building race cars, right, you work on race cars, you work on the cars with the two guys that finish behind you, do you ever worry about, like, when you make it look that easy, do you know what the, are you going to get complaints at the shop this week, I guess is what I'm asking.
I mean, nobody likes to lose, and it's a game, you know, it's a game at the end of the day.
Yep.
You know, we all do this for fun, but, you know, I suspect, you know, there'll probably be some upset people, you know, at some point. But, you know, we all have the same opportunities, you know, and the same chances. And I hope, if anything, it shows them that, you know, it can be done. It requires a little bit more effort that way, you know. And I'm good friends with everybody that I've raced with, you know, that comes out of our camp for the most part. And they're all great drivers. They all have, you know, great histories racing-wise. Is they've all done very well. They run well here, and I knew coming down here that they were going to be tough to beat.
Mm.
But it's no different than what makes people, you know, great at what they do. It's going the extra little bit, and that's what we try to, you know, strive to do. And, you know, that's what separated us, I think, today.
Yeah, I thought, not to get off on a tangent, which I did warn you ahead of time I could do. I thought one of the most impressive things about today that can easily be lost in all of it was the run that Shane Clark had. He was unbelievable today. And he never dropped out of the top five, but he almost never lost sight of you. I mean, he was straight away.
I got, you know, it's a funny story about Shane. Shane's a real good buddy, you know, and I've come down here and helped Shane, you know, a handful of races that way. But last year was the first time I had come down and tried to run the Coastal, you know, myself in a bunch of years. Well, the previous two or three seasons before that, I had come down, honestly, in crew chief for Shane.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm racing along, we have a restart, and Shane's just chewing at my left rear, and it's like, man, the one race he's going to put it all together, you're going to kick my ass here, you know? And he deserves it, you know, just as much as anybody that way. He's put the time in, and I know how much this race means to him.
Yeah.
But it was a blast racing with him. Dave, you know, all them guys that you could really run with clean.
Yeah.
Lap cars gave me plenty of room that way. They were very respectable, and it was all great that way.
I only have one more thing I want to ask you about. Can we talk about your beard game or not? Did you kind of
is it like gnarly? Right? I haven't even looked at it.
It's pretty well, yeah. But like I said to you, I saw Ben this morning in the pits, and I commented. I said I trimmed mine because there's way too much gray in it. And, you know, 30's not that far away, which means 40's not that far away.
Don't tell me that,
which
man.
Means at some point, well, you're a positive thinker. You'll be fine. But at some point, what's going to happen is there's going to be so much gray. Enjoy it now is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, yeah.
I have no hair on my head, and my beard is an embarrassment.
Yeah, it's
how long has it been since you've shaved?
Oh,
that's what I want to know.
I don't know.
Trim it, but how long have you been growing the beard? You know. Don't tell me you don't know.
It's probably been 8 months, probably.
That's it, huh?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's nice. I'm not going to lie, but I'm also going to say that there was at least three different cautions where I was riding around and I grabbed a drink. You know, so I'm trying to feed the straw in my mouth, and I realized at that point that I had more beard hair in my mouth than I did out of my mouth.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, oh, this has got to go. I can't keep doing this.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing, Ben? You know?
So are we going to see you back here? Are we going to see you around this summer? Do you have any plans to do any more races right now?
I'll be perfectly honest with you. This is the only race I had planned. You know, I know I put a lot of money into it to come down and run one race. It was probably a little bit foolish, but it just kind of goes to show you what this race did mean to me that way. But I don't know. You never know what tomorrow brings. I've gotten phone calls before that I didn't expect, and maybe they'll, you know, something will happen. I'd love to drive race cars. I'd love to drive race cars every day of the week.
Right.
That's
right.
The
money is kind of
that's the fun part. But you know, for myself, I'm trying to put myself in a little better position, you know, financially for some you know, moves I'd like to make down the road, and it. Racing kind of cuts into that, so I have to be in a little bit of an adult, and it sucks.
Yeah, it only gets worse.
Oh, it sucks, man. It's like, man, why do I have to have, like, a life outside of racing? I just can't race.
Right,
Why do I gotta have bills?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out how to get away with those. Listen, I want to thank you for taking a couple minutes. I know you probably got a million things to do. You'd probably like to go celebrate a little bit, but congratulations. That was a fun day. That was a good win.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And hopefully we'll see you down the road.
Oh, sure.
Thanks, Ben. Many thanks again to Ben for coming on Loose Wheels. Certainly gracious. It was kind of a neat experience sitting there with him in the stands, in the very place he used to watch races at Wiscasset Speedway as a kid. No doubt that win meant a lot to him last Sunday. I certainly hope it means we see him more at the racetrack. I think Ben's good for the sport. I really do. He's very bright. He's very articulate. He works in the industry at distance race cars, so he kind of has his finger on the pulse of what the issues are, and so I think it's great. That's going to do it for Loose Wheels. Wow, we're already done. Week 2 is in the books, so all of you, thanks so much for listening to Loose Wheels. If you see us on Facebook, share it, tell your friends about it, get people to read it, and look for auto racing coverage all season long, centralmaine.com. I'm Travis Barrett. I'm your host of Loose Wheels, and we will see you again next week.